who wants to ask the first question? Mr. Kors, please.
Yeah, two questions from my side. Maybe first with regard to Sunrise. Do your competitors also have an open software system to invite the community to program new applications? Secondly, how long will it take to upgrade the software for the Quantec robots also to the Sunrise software platform? How will you manage, for instance, the RISE robotics integration from the software perspective? Is it also planned to transform or to transfer Sunrise to your newly acquired robots? The second question relates to financials. The new IVA robot, in terms of volumes and revenues, what are your plans there midterm?
Let me start, and you can see if the colleagues can add. I think one is important, Sunrise, our new software generation coming with the Elbe IVA. So IVA is paving the way for Sunrise, and I think Chris demonstrated what the features for Sunrise are, the modularity, object-based programming, and all the features which are coming with Sunrise. I think it's important that Sunrise also gets into the market with the Elbe IVA, that Sunrise can communicate and can work together in an environment where you have Sunrise and also our KSD4. So we see that we have somewhat like an advantage to the competition. But clearly, we don't want to comment on the competition, but we see that Sunrise is really something which is new on the market, and we also, and I think KUKA is, if you compare to others, we also look beyond industry, and I think Sunrise is the example. So it's on the one hand the industry world and the service world, and Sunrise can match both, and that we have here a product in the future which can work in both industries and service. So I think we are ahead of the competition. I don't want to say we have the only solution, but we are clearly ahead of the solution. On the software strategy in the future, you mentioned rightly that we have bought RISE. You have seen RISE booth really next to our booth. It's very nice with the blue color and the orange color, so it's really, you can see how it fits together with us. So it's really our brand-wise. You can see that we have the RISE brand, but working under the KUKA roof. We have with the KSD4 the industrial software. We have the RISE software. And we have the KUKA Sunrise, and where we have clearly a strategy to going forward to work towards one solution, one standard, because as Chris rightly mentioned, when we have one standard product and based on the standard, which is, might be more open than today, we also have to work on the applications. This is the way we are doing in the next years, but clearly there is the industry world is talking KSD4 today, and there's no change today or tomorrow with KSC4. Sunrise is starting with the Elbe IVA, and we have to see how Sunrise develops on the IVA side, and then we can adjust the whatever is required, and clearly the long-term goal is to have one software platform. On the financials, I think last night a couple of discussions about how KUKA, where KUKA is today positioned, and I think it's very important to also see the fair here in the right light. I think KUKA is on the one hand facing challenges from the IT side, from America, where we talk about the IT world, where we talk about the orange cloud, talk about what is available in the cloud, perception, and all the intelligence, so learning machines. But on the other hand, it's also important that we work on the cost. We are competing against China. So I think what is where KUKA is today, in the middle, in Europe, so our base in Europe. But on the one hand, competition is coming from China with lower cost robots, with lower quality robots. On the other hand, we have the IT Googles, on the other hand, clearly coming from the IT side. Here today, we are showing our innovation part. Today, we are showing here what we can do on the high-end part. We also have the cost part, but that's not today's focus. So IVA is our innovation product. It shows the new dimension of robots. And clearly we have our plans. Manfred, if you want, you can talk about the numbers we see. We see potential, but it's important to really look at the product. It's not the next Quantec. It's Elbe IVA. It allows a new dimension of robots. Quantec, we talk about 10,000. And Manfred, maybe you give some ideas about the numbers if you want, and also about what we see on the IVA.
So this year, the idea is to assemble 250 systems as the start. We bring this in the market. Most of the site is in Poland, only to have idea on the one hand side, and after then you can realize together with the system and the component the new ideas to adaptive production.
Okay, so next question, please. Lucy?
Hi. Good morning. Just a couple of questions from my side. The first one, in terms of business model, you've explained very clearly the benefits of Sunrise. Could we be thinking of a business model where, you know, similar to what we see at Windows, for example, where you would have different versions of Sunrise and where the customers would be able to upgrade Sunrise by, you know, acquiring a new license, for example? So that's question number one. Question number two is in terms of a bit more financial in terms of R&D. Obviously, the expenses in R&D have been stepped up last year and also this year. You've brought now the new product to the market, which is obviously a great thing compared to previous robotics products. Should we see percentage of sales in terms of R&D expense kind of, you know, coming back to that more normalized level, or are you still working to new innovation above and beyond the IWA? That was for the second question. And then just finally, more generally on the market, obviously the IWA is bringing new applications in the industry. Let's say in 5 years, how do you see the share of robots like IWA within the global robotics application, whether it's industrial or even some side applications?
Start. I think the business model is clearly where we are heading to. I think the Sunrise and also the new software generation that would make it easier to also have the features or the benefits of the IT industry with upgrades that we are sending via cloud, new updates or also applications. I think Chris mentioned a nice example. What is the cloud? The cloud in the end infrastructure. So you have maybe one developer in China developing an arc for a welding application. You put it in the cloud and you can use it across the world, because you have with the cloud infrastructure, you can really serve globally the same product and also can do applications, but also upgrades. So clearly, I think with cloud, with the connection to the IT world, we can also have the benefits of upgrading products and giving new releases much faster than in the past.
Just to follow up on that, maybe, will that be actually invoiced to your clients, to the people having access to your cloud?
I think it's something where we have to think about the business model and then to come up with a picture once we have launched it. I think first of all it's important that we setting the standards with the cloud and also with our software. The question is really on applications. We have to make our money. We have to make our money on our applications. We also want to invite people to program on our basis. We have to think about license models. So there will be beside the normal cooker business, which is in the end we are selling based on our, it's always a combination of mechatronic, of software, and then of the user interface. We're selling in certain markets our products. What can be a big opportunity on top of that, we are selling also applications which have been programmed by the IT world and are sold through cooker. So in the end we can open up new markets because we have more application engineers available, and which say if they use our SDK, our standards, we can sell their applications through our system. So I think it's where we have a, besides the traditional model, we're selling our products, we are also able in the future to sell products to this channel. Maybe, Peter, will you want to answer on the R&D expense?
Regarding R&D, I think for KUKA it's really important that we are an innovation leader and a technology leader, and therefore that enables us to get a higher margin in the future for our products. And I think it's really important for us to have new products in the pipeline. Therefore, the R&D budgets, like you see them now, is what I would expect we should keep in the future too. In general, we have plenty of ideas what we can do. For example, to roll out Sunrise into the broader number of products into the Quantec robots, and there are plenty of business cases and ideas where I think it's worth spending the money efficiently in our R&D.
I want to add regarding the market in 5 years, how many industrial robots and how many sensitive robots we will have. KUKA will develop from industrial over the human robot cooperation to the service robotic. And when we look to the industrial field, we need on the one hand side the industrial robot, this low performance, low cost on the one hand side. On the other side, we have also application high-end, what we need, a sensitive robot. So I would say 80% more the industrial robot and 20% service robotic. But with the key technology and the development from industrial robotic to the service robotic, we will go to the consumer market. And here we have a totally other number in our mind.
I think it's a bit different from the area also. If you look in a car plant and you look in the assembly area, or you look in the engine assembly or gearbox assembly, I think we can really have complete lines with the LBR in future, complete flexible lines with the LBR. So today we have a lot of manual work there, and we can change this to the LBR. In a body shop, for example, where you have welding and all that stuff, where you have heavy equipment to carry, of course the level is much more lower. So there you can do handling, you can do logistics with the LBR, but you cannot weld with the LBR because the welding gun is much too heavy for that. So it's a bit different. So, but I would say in the assembly area, you can have a very high level of percentage of LBR, for example.
And just maybe two more follow-ups. If you're looking between the classical robots you have now, the welding robots, for example, and the IOR, or the new variants of the IOR that you will have, how do you see the growth rate between the two?
I wrote an article on the Spiegel on Monday, so I've been exactly asked this question last week. So I think it's one that we have today. If you have the IFR number, International Federation of Robotics, last year 145,000 six-axis articulated robots, and today maybe the service robotics maybe 5,000 plus minus. Then now we talk about what we believe. It's not IFR. We're looking in the future. So we know that the industrial robotics is increasing by 5 to 10% annually. We know that China is above 10%. That Europe is flat little growth, and that U.S. also growing. The question is, we showed you in the past also the potential impact by an industry like 3C, where only if you automize whole of 3C, you have 500,000 plus robots, which somewhat is between service and industry, because you have different tasks compared to today. So, and given that what Chris was mentioning, that on the one hand we have the cost reduction on the design to cost on the product, so the return on investment will be earlier. And secondly, we have the potential of the software development, where we have many more applications. And, I believe that the service robot, the trend, the development will not be like scalable, like 10%, 20%, but really exponential will develop over the next years. And I think that besides the industrial side growing by 10%, the service side will be maybe a share of, in 3 to 5 years, of at least 50% or same size, because I believe in the speed of this, but it's difficult to put it now in a model. But I see that the EVA is a change in habits, a change in how we think about automation. And clearly we will come up with a next EVA, with next generations of lightweight man-machine interaction robots, and also others will follow up. And I believe that the trend will accelerate by far, very fast.
Okay, coming to the next question, Mr. Wright.
How can we imagine something like an inflection point? That means, for the time being, you sell 250 EVAs this year, which is a very low number, and given the number of 20% of total robots in, say, 5 years, this, for me, or in my view, is still a very low penetration of the market. We have the experience made with Daimler in the last 1.5-2 years, and perhaps there will be a rush of the other OEMs, say, in similar cooperation with EVAs, but this for me seems not to be something like an inflection point. That means that a broad variety of EVA-style robots will penetrate the market. In your view, what would be, say, generate a higher perception of customers, of sectors, to equip their plants with EVA-styled robots?
You know, I think it's important, first of all, that you look around on the fair. You don't see any other robot application without a fence. So we're talking about innovation. We don't talk about whatever payload of 3 or 5 kilos, something which is the next level of industry robot, which might be a little bit faster or different in payload. We talk about a different concept of automation. Daimler is our lead customer for the last 2 years on the EVA, and we are developing together with Daimler a new product which can work hand in hand. I think what Manfred Gunther was showing, the different steps of how you automate, where we're coming from, and what is really possible on really close man-machine interaction, where really the man or the machine is holding parts and working together. So it's something which is starting. Clearly, what is clearly accelerating a process is if costs are getting down and if software is getting more capable, if you have software in more applications. Chris was showing that one is clearly the sensor-based robotics, so the cost of sensors will in the future go down more. The more sensors you have, the more vision, the more navigation, the more topics you can integrate in the robot. So clearly, on the one hand, the cost for the hardware will go down, which is normal, which you also have seen in the industrial side. And with cost and going down, there will be more applications. But the more important part is the software side, where, you know, we are at the starting point of a new generation of software coming with EVA. And this is something where today, as I mentioned, Marco was mentioning the 250 EVAs for this year. It's not a Quantec, but it's changing the way we're working, and it's changing the way systems is working because we have new concepts. It's changing the way a robot is sold, because if you're looking at a total solution for an application, today you have lots of peripheral equipment. So, for example, the whole solution costs 300,000, and the robot is part of it. With the EVA, the whole solution will be cheaper. Maybe the robot costs are higher, but the total solution is cheaper. And I think it's a change that we see, which we are starting with Daimler. And I'm convinced that, you know, the speed which we see on Sunrise and which we push new products on our side will accelerate. And therefore, we are big believers in the trend which is EVA setting. And I think it will show us in 2-3 years how many service and sensitive robots are sold in the market compared to today. But I think it would be wrong now to say, give you a number of 2,000, 3,000. It's only that we are starting today with this application in a new generation, new dimension of robotics.
This was to be even more precise. Once, the experience you made with Daimler will be open for the whole market, and you are, as I imagine, discussing with other OEMs, what is your planning for the shipment of EVAs in 2015?
Approximately 1,000 robots.
Coming to the next question, Mr. Ubert.
Yes, Sebastian Ubert from UBS. For a question on the EVA robot, where do you see the margin potential for that robot, and then also with regards to the robots division, which we will see potentially below 10% this year, That was my first question. And the second question is, you mentioned increasing competition from low-cost countries, Chinese robot makers. How do the Japanese players behave these days with the weak Japanese yen? And what's their rationale in terms of price pressure?
On the margin potential, we have the two targets, which is on robotics for this year, an EBIT margin between 9.5% and 10%, and for systems at least 6%. As well as the components, as well as the solutions which are sold by Frank Klingemann and respectively Manfred Gundela, clearly confirming this EBIT. And as a new product brings in innovation, clearly the product should have should be margin accretive for both businesses. So clearly with new products you have a USP, you have a unique product which we show here, so we will have some potential on the margin. On the yen side, rightly, after beginning of 2013 the yen was devaluated by 20-25%. We have early on communicated that we have two competitors from Japan, Fanuc and Yaskawa, and AB and us from Europe, that clearly we are sourcing from Japan, but clearly the exposure to the yen is for the Japanese competitors higher, so they have more potential to lower potentially costs. We see that the competition is more active, not aggressive, but it's more active, and clearly we want to keep our share. So in the end, we have shown also on our guidance that we are lowered the guidance from 10% last year to 9.5% to 10% because of yen. And you also know from the part that we want to go towards 12%, you should compare also the impact on our margin, not only by 10 to 9.5, but from maybe 11.5 to 9.5. So yes, we see the impact of the yen, but we also, Manfred Gundler team and the team across KUKA is working to work on the cost side. That means shifting more things to China, working on design to cost of the product, so efficiency program is very important.
So can we say that at least the Japanese have stabilized on a certain level, or do they plan to go further down to...
We can only give you a snapshot on what is happening today. You're talking mainly about the big contracts, the global contracts. If you talk about GI customers, where we go in intense discussion about the technology, there the price argument is less important. Always important, price is important, but on small customers, GI, you're talking about the solution. Why is our robot better than other robots? Why is our solution advantageous? Why is our service better? Something where you can have different arguments and you can justify maybe a little bit more on price. If you have big numbers and you have global customers, they can, and if the product is more commoditized, you clearly can easier compare. But also here, it's important that KUKA stands not only for being always the cheapest, but for having the innovative product, to be close to the plant managers, to be close to the innovation department, that we come up with new solutions, that we help our customers to work on their needs. So why are we doing the lightweight designer? Because there is a big need on further automation of the assembly line. We have shown in the body and white, we have 80 to 90% automation. Assembly line, there's only 40 to 50%. And I think what we are doing here, we, together with the industry where we are number one, where we are closest, we are working on this industry and changing it. So clearly we see the biggest margin impact on the automotive side or on the big customers. But given today, I think we have, as always, big competition. Competition has a benefit of the weak yen, but it didn't change over the last 3 to 4 months.
And I have to add something.
On distance, you don't have it.
You should not forget, we do more than 50% of the revenue in the systems business, and there we have no impact because of the weak yen. You should not forget that if you analyze that.
No, but it's important.
Thank you.
Coming then to the next question, Mr. Rehner, please.
Maybe one question regarding the man-machine collaboration. Is there any legal restriction in any country where this is not allowed? Because I think this is a new technology, and the rules, the legal rules, are old-fashioned, so to say. So are there any legal problems to bring these solutions to the market? This is one question. Also regarding safety software side, if everybody is able to make his own application, has this any influence on the safety, for the security of these kind of robotic? Because I would assume that if there is one thing that goes in the wrong direction, and this will be made public, and this will have a huge influence for the exception for this kind of new technology. And last one regarding this acceptance, is it you have already a feedback from the staff of your customers? Because I remember there in the 80s, we have had a big fear of people for seeing a new era of robotics. Hall 54, Volkswagen, for example. This has completely changed nowadays. I think the classical industrial robot is no threat for the normal worker. But can this possibly change in future? Because now, with this close interaction, it's a direct confrontation, in my view, between worker and robot. Might this also have influence? There are any studies or direct contacts with customers where you have a reaction, how they see it, and it, of course, the controller, for him, it's interesting to have these kind of solution, but the acceptance of the stuff at the customer is also important, I think.
So I would like to start. Very important with the sensitive robot is on one hand side is that the lightweight and the safety. KUKA, we have a lot of experience with safety. You know, with our RoboCoaster, we were the first company ever who has the license to transport people, or in the medical part to position the people for angiography and particle therapy. So that means we work very close with the standard committee and we work on appropriate standards here. In the moment, currently valid is the ISO 10218, but he says clearly that you need for every application, it refers to a risk assessment. And therefore we have the ISO 15066, and that's in the draft status. And we work very close with the technical inspection on the one hand side and also with the professional association, Berufsgenossenschaft.
So this is for Germany?
This is not only for Germany. This is a standard. ISO is a standard worldwide. Valid worldwide. It's not only KUKA. Also the Japanese robot manufacturer are in this gremium.
Okay. So what we have, as Mr. Gundis said, we have this ISO, we have state of the art or stand der Technik today, and we have the, let's say in German, Einbauerklärung from the robot side, and from the application side, we have to bring in the CE confirmation, and that is checked by the security department of the OEMs. So we have a recommendation of the Berufsgenossenschaft, where we have in the values, the forces we have to cover, and they are checking our installations. They don't give the agreement, but they are checking it's okay from their side or not. So we are working very close together with this professional association. In all our solutions today we are delivering. The other thing you were asking, what's the feedback from the customer? What is the feedback from the production? So we have an extremely positive feedback there. So also, for example, in the Daimler case, we are working together, even with the union, we are working together with production, and the feedback is they see this big help in ergonomy. So they have a lot of working places where they say, oh, the worker has every day when you go home, he has a hurt in his back or he's working as I have explained before, with this plugs and overhead equipment, or he has to jump in every car to install things, so we are able to put in the robot in the car, and he's working hand in hand with the operator, and we have extremely positive feedback. They are asking for the solution. They cannot wait to have the installation, and we will install in Daimler really production in a three-shift system that is working every day.
So even IG Metall is no problem?
At least the units from the Daimler side, what is, you can say, I would say the same like IG Metall.
Okay.
Well, I think to add to this, clearly this man-machine interaction is a new format, a new way of automation, so discussion clearly happening on the Berufsgenossenschaft and also with customers. And you mentioned also about studies how man and machine are working together. But in the end, I think everybody is, including Daimler and IG Metall, what do they want? They want to keep business, they want to keep automation manufacturing in Germany. And the competition is not the robot, the competition is in other regions. So how can we keep as much as possible manufacturing power in Germany or in the Americas, not to compete with East German, East Europe or East or Asia. So I think that's important that we are all here from the European side on this, we're running the same direction. We want to keep as much production here, and we can keep as much production here when we have if we have automized as much as possible, because the labor costs are a tenth in China, a tenth in Hungary. So we need to automize to keep it here, and I think there all the unions in the end in the same direction.
Let me add one point from VW. We know in the production area 50% of the people in the production area is between 45 and 55 years old, and we have heard that in 10 years 40% will be between 55 and 65 years old. And therefore, the IG Metall and also human resources are very, very interested to support the work in the field of the assembly.
Okay, coming to the next question.
Final question regarding software with these applications. Are there, is it so no additional risk with other kind of applications would could change of any kind the behavior of the robot?
Excellent question. So we thought a lot about that, and in Sunrise we separated the safety control system from the main control system. So the safety system is watching what the main control system is doing. So if you are adding your applications or if you have access to open interfaces, of course you can control the robot, but the safety system itself watch what the robot is doing, so it doesn't affect the safety system. So this is a separation concept we have in Sunrise to guarantee that no one will be harmed by a bad application. But of course, it's human-robot collaboration. You have to know how to configure your safety system and how to design your application as a whole application. That's a very important step.
Okay, next question, Mr. Bodnar, please.
One of your target industry has always been, and I think is also in the future, the medical technology. What use can you report for this industry, and is this also a target industry for your lightweight robot?
Next question clear, yes, and you can also see at the booth applications on the medical side for bone cutting. It's not that the robot is cutting bones, but the robot is helping the doctor to be assisted, that is, so that the rate of mistakes or the failure tolerance is getting lower. So it's something where the robot is helping that the doctors are more efficient. On the medical side, clearly, we are working with Siemens, Accuray, and Forte on medical robots, and the lightweight robot will have also an impact on the medical side. The medical side is an industry where we have long-term plans. We know that we are around 20, 25 to 30 million revenue in the medical side. Lightweight will help here, but it's different to other industries or to different divisions, because the robot always is an application where you have the process, as could be gluing, could be welding, it could also be an operation room, and you have the component. And you need the openness and the willingness to change the industry by the users, by the doctors. And there the pace is different than automotive industry. Automotive industry, 3C logistics is driven by price and quality. And for example, medical side, there are different factors coming in, and therefore the speed of the medical side is different to the industry side. However, we see their long-term goal, and the LightWELD will help us to grow further in the medical side.
And how long will it take that the LightWELD robot will be implemented in the medical technology?
It's already implemented. You can see it out there. You can ask questions with the colleagues.
Okay.
So it's implemented.
Okay, next question, Mr. Whelan, please.
Before, you touched on the point of competition also coming from China, aside from the technological competition from the US. Could you give us a brief update on your strategy for the Chinese market? And particularly, I think that I remember correctly that you're at the moment most in the premium side of the market, if you think about it as a pyramid. What is your idea about the mid-market segment, which is, I think, high volume, and given that the market is growing so strongly, could you just give us an overview there?
I think, first of all, it's important that we look at KUKA as a whole, and then maybe Manfred can give some ideas about KUKA Robotics. Today we have approximately 250 to 300 million revenue in China with 600 to 700 people. About this is part, a big part is KUKA Robotics. 20% of the business is from China. And then we have KUKA Systems, which is run by Frank. And then we have also Rice Robotics, which is new to the family. And total, we have something between 250 and 300 million. And clearly, the goal is in the next 3 to 5 years to double the business in China, because we see the growth rate in China. And we also see that on the integration as well as the product side, we have a huge potential given the IFR numbers. I think maybe you want to add something to China, what we're doing there?
China is for us is the biggest market in the world, before Germany, US, and also Japan, with around 23 robots and a plus increase of 10% for every year. I think we are very well prepared for the future from the industrial robotics side. We have the competition from the Chinese robot manufacturer, but the key, what we see, is the mechatronical system. It's the combination of mechanic, of software, of the controller, and safety. And we have a big advantage, especially from the technology side. So we think we are not only in the premium sector. We feel that more and more also in the middle sector. But therefore, you are right, we have to add our portfolio. 4 years ago, we introduced the Quantic series. 2 years ago, with Agilos. Now we have the Elbe Eva, and next step will follow, especially in the payload of 6, 10, or less than 6 kilograms.
And perhaps to add that on the system side again, you're right, and in the past we had only this premium car makers there and premium customers, but we see it the same way like you mentioned. So we stepped in the middle area, so we had the first orders there with local Chinese car makers, and of course we have to change a little bit then also our structure, and are looking to work together with low cost suppliers in the Chinese market.
Next question, Mr. Wood, please.
And one follow-up question. What do you think is your competitive advantage in terms of years ahead of the big players like Fanuc, Escava, ABB? When do you expect them to have sensitive robots, and how do you see them, the pricing of those?
You should ask the question to them. How big is the advantage? You know, the Elbe Eva is, you have seen the prototype in earlier years, so it's not... what is new today is the application, that we clearly get the man-machine interaction done, and that we have the new applications across KUKA that we show you what ways are, what is possible in the future. I haven't seen a product today, but I believe that also Fanuc and the others will follow if they get it industrial, so that it's really industrial, I call it industry tauglich, that it's in mass production available. That's something we haven't seen today. But clearly, since FANUC and AB are really big competitors, I think also expect that they are coming up with something similar in the future. I don't know if it's 1 year, if it's 2 years, that I can't kind of judge on. But I think it's second thing is also important that we have the application know-how. And that's something, you know, we have on the one hand, we have the product, which you can see. And in the product, you have the mechanic, you have the industry robots, you have the EVA. We are adding the software side. And I think on the software side, we are more advanced because we have been very early thought in the service industry, with medical, with entertainment. We were much more open. We were introducing PC-based controller and software very early before the others. So we were really very, very, very early moving into mainstream IT, which is an accelerator on the speed side. So I think there we have something, and then on top we have the application know-how and the engineer know-how from systems, so, and that we have done for the last 2 years. So I think in total we have something where we can offer a better solution, and for the better solution we also get a better margin because there is nothing available today. But clearly I ever expect competition to be in the next corner, so even on the low-cost side in China and also on the high-tech side, that's something where we should never underestimate.
But I'm convinced that the answer will not come from the customer. We think that the answer will come from the standard committee, from norming gremium. We have our own way with our 7-axis, and every axis we have a torque sensor inside. Costs a little bit money, that's right, but we are convinced that that's the right way. And KUKA per IVA complies with all relevant standards today.
If there are no further questions, thank you very much for your attention. If later come additional questions, please contact your IR team, and thank you much for your day.